Nanny had placed the cauldron in the middle of the floor for the look of the thing, although an indoor coven meeting didn't feel right, and one without Granny Weatherwax felt worse. Perdita said it made them look like soppy girls playing at it. The only fire in the room was in the huge black iron range, the very latest model recently installed for Nanny by her loving sons. On it, the kettle began to boil.
"I'll make the tea, shall I?" said Magrat, getting up.
"No, you sit down. It's Agnes's job to make the tea," said Nanny. "You're the mother, so it's your job to pour."
"What's your job, Nanny?" said Agnes.
"I drinks it," said Nanny promptly.
"Right.
We've got to find out more while they're still acting friendly. Agnes, you go back to the castle with Magrat and the baby. She needs extra help anyway."
"What good will that do?"
"You told me yourself," said Nanny. "Vampires don't affect you. As soon as they try to see Agnes's mind, it sinks down, and up pops Perdita like a seesaw. Just when they're looking at Perdita, here comes Agnes again. Young Vlad's definitely got his eye on you, ain't he?"
"Certainly not."
"Yeah, right," said Nanny. "Men always like women that have got a bit of mystery to 'em. They like a challenge, see? And while he's got his eye on you, keeping your eye on Magrat, you've got your other eye on him. Understand? Everyone's got a weakness. Maybe we'll not see the back of these vampires by going over to the curtains and saying, 'My, isn't it stuffy in here?' But there's got to be some other way."
"And if there isn't?"
"Marry him," said Nanny firmly.
Magrat gasped. The teapot rattled in her hand.
"That's horrible," she said. "I'd rather kill myself," said Agnes.
"In the morning," said Perdita. "Don't have to be a long marriage," said Nanny. "Put a pointy stake in your garter, and our lad'll be getting cold even before they've finished cutting up the wedding cake."
"Nanny!"
"Or maybe you could just sort of make him change his ways a bit," Nanny went on. "It's amazing what a wife can do if she knows her own mind. Or minds, in your case, of course. Look at King Verence the First, for one. He used to toss all his meat bones over his shoulder until he was married, and the Queen made him leave them on the side of the plate. I'd only been married to the first Mr. Og for a month before he was getting out of the bath if he needed to pee." "You can refine a husband. Maybe you could point him in the direction of blutwurst and black puddings and underdone steak."
"You really haven't got any scruples, have you, Nanny?" said Agnes.
"No," said Nanny simply. "This is Lancre we're talking about. If we was men, we'd be talking about laying down our lives for the country. As women, we can talk about laying down."
"I just don't want to hear this," said Magrat.
"I ain't asking her to do what I wouldn't do myself," said Nanny.
"Really? Then why?"
"Because no one wants me to do it," said Nanny. "But if I was 50 years younger, I reckon I could have Sonny Jim biting turnips by midsummer."
"You mean just because she's a woman, she should use sexual wiles on him?" said Magrat. "This is so, well, it's so Nanny Og, that's all I can say."
"She should use any wile she can lay her hands on," said Nanny. "I don't care what Granny said, there's always a way. Like the hero in Tussaud, or whatever it was, who was completely invincible except for his heel, and someone stuck a spear in it and killed him."
"What are you expecting her to do, prod him all over?"
"I never understood that story anyway," said Nanny. "I mean, if I knew I'd got a heel that would kill me if someone stuck a spear in it, I'd go into battle wearing heavy boots."
"You don't know what he's like," said Agnes, ignoring the diversion. "He looks at me as if he's undressing me with his eyes."
"Eyes is allowed," said Nanny. "And he's laughing at me all the time, as if he knows I don't like him, and that adds to the fun." "Now you get into that castle," Nanny growled. "For Lancre, for the king, for everyone in the country. And if he gets too much, let Perdita take over, because I reckon there's some things she's better at."
In the shocked silence, there was a faint clinking noise from Nanny's sideboard. Magrat coughed.
"Just like the old days," she said, "arguing all the time."
Nanny stood up and unhooked a cast-iron saucepan from the beam over the kitchen range.
"You can't treat people like this," said Agnes sullenly.
"I can," said Nanny, tiptoeing in the direction of the sideboard. "I'm the other one now, see?"
Ornaments flew and shattered as she brought the saucepan down hard, bottom upwards.
"Gotcha, you little blue devil," she shouted. "Don't think I didn't see you."
The saucepan rose. Nanny leaned her weight on the handle, but it still moved slowly along the dresser, rocking slightly from side to side until it reached the edge. Something red and blue dropped onto the floor and started moving towards the closed door. At the same time, Grebo shot past Agnes, accelerating. And then, just as he was about to spring, he changed his mind. All 4 feet extended their claws at the same time and bit into the floorboards. He rolled, sprang onto his feet, and started to wash himself. The red and blue blur hit the door and picked itself up, becoming a blue man, 6 inches tall, with red hair. He carried a sword about the same size as himself.
"Ach, hins tak yer skaggy, yer dank yul kalyik," he screamed. "Oh, it's you," said Nanny, relaxing. "Do you want a drink?"
The sword was lowered slightly, but with a definite hint that it could be raised again at a moment's notice.
"Taz it?"
Nanny reached down to the crate by her chair and sorted through the bottles.
"Scumble, my best. Vintage," she said.
The wee man's tiny eyes lit up.
"Last Tuesday?"
"Right. Agnes, open that sewing box and pass me a thimble, will you?" "Come away here, man," said Nanny, uncorking the bottle well away from the fire and filling up the thimble. "Ladies, this is... let's see them tattoos. Yes, this is one of the Knack Mac Feagle. The little bastards comes down and raids my still about once a year. I reckon I recognise the pattern."
"Ying's your grail yin. Su's a rict d'ye,"
said the old man, taking the thimble.
"What is he?"
said Magrat.
"They're gnomes," said Nanny.
The man lowered the thimble.
"Pixies?"
"Pixies, if you insist," said Nanny. "They live up on the high moors, over towards Uberwald."
"Ach, be ye snee richt spiel. You'll behin it, figures. Yon ken sweel boggin bloodsuckers, I'll do tae."
Nanny nodded while she listened. Halfway through the little man's rant, she topped up his thimble.
"All right," she said, when he seemed to have finished.
"Well, he says the Knack Mac Feagle have been forced out by the vampires, see? They've been driving out all the..." Her lips moved as she tried out various translations. "Old people."
"That's very cruel," said Margaret.
"No, I mean old races. People that live in the corners, you know. The ones you don't see around a lot. Centaurs. Bogies. Gnomes."
"Pixies?"
"Yeah, right. Driving 'em out of the country."
"Why should they do that?"
"Probably not fashionable anymore," said Nanny.
Agnes looked hard at the pixie. On a scale of ethereal from 1 to 10, he looked as if he was on some other scale, probably one buried in deep ocean sludge. The blueness of his skin, she could see now, was made up of tattoos and paint. His red hair stuck out at all angles. His sole concession to the temperature was a leather loincloth. He saw her looking at him.
"Yist, away fra yeeks! Yes, stockin' good, that bar big jobs?"
Sorry, said Agnes.
"Good language, ain't it?" said Nanny. "A hint of heather and midden. But when you got the Knack Mac Feagle on your side, you're doing okay."
The pixie waved the empty thimble at Nanny.
"Gale or bloody lemonade, Kalyik?"
"Ah, no foolin' you. You want the real stuff," said Nanny.
She pulled back a chair cushion and produced a black glass bottle with its cork held on by wire.
"You're not giving in that, are you?" said Magrat. "That's your medicinal whiskey."
"And you always tell people it's strictly for external use only," said Agnes. "Ah, the Knack Mac Feagle are a hard-headed race," said Nanny, handing it down to the tiny man.
To Agnes's amazement, he grasped a bottle bigger than himself with insolent ease.
"There you go, man. Share it with your mates, 'cause I know they're around here somewhere."
There was a clink from the dresser. The witches looked up. Hundreds of pixies had simply appeared among the ornaments. Most of them wore pointy hats that curved so that the point was practically pointing down, and they all carried swords.
"Amazing how they can just fade into the foreground like that," said Nanny. "That's what's kept 'em so safe all these years. That and killing most people who saw 'em, of course."
Grebo very quietly went and sat under her chair.
"So, you gentlemen have been turned out by the vampires, have you?" said Nanny, as the bottle bobbed through the throng.
A roar went up.
"Blast it! Ech! You isn't fast evil! Arnock, a hard ticket! Big jobs!"
"I dare say you can stop in Lancre," said Nanny above the din.
"Just a moment, Nanny," Magrat began.
Nanny waved a hand at her hurriedly.
"There's that island up on the lake," she went on, raising her voice. "It's where the herons nest. Just the place, eh? Lots of fish, lots of hunting up the valley."
The blue pixies went into a huddle. Then one of them looked up.
"Prisney, you'll's ne bring it, my gale."
"Or you'd be left to yourself," said Nanny. "But no stealing cattle, eh?"
"These steal cattle," said Agnes. "Full-size cattle. How many of them does it take?"
"Four."
"Four?
One under each foot. Seen 'em do it. You see a cow in a field, minding its own business. Next minute the grass is rustling, some little bugger shouts, hup, 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 and the poor beast goes past boom, without its legs moving," said Nanny. "They're stronger than cockroaches. You step on a pixie, you'd better be wearing thick soles."
"Nanny, you can't give them the island. It doesn't belong to you," said Magrat.
"It don't belong to anyone," said Nanny.
"It belongs to the king."
"Ah, well, what's his is yours. So give him the island and Verence can sign a bit of paper later on. It's worth it," Nanny added. "A rent of not stealing our cows is well worth it. Otherwise you'll see cows zipping around very fast. Backwards, sometimes."
"Without their legs moving," said Agnes.
"Right."
"Well," Magrat began.
"And they'll be useful," Nanny added, lowering her voice.
"Fighting's what they like best."
"Whist, yon fellat free, Eckersbur."
"Drinking's what they like best," Nanny corrected herself.
"Ne hoon a scallon."
"Drinking and fighting's what they like best," said Nanny.
"And snufflin kubisti."
"And stealing cows," said Nanny. "Drinking, fighting, and stealing cows is what they like best. Listen, Magrat, I'd rather have them in here pissing out than outside pissing in. There's more of them and they'll make your ankles all wet."
"But what can they do?" said Magrat.
"Well, Grebo's frightened of them," said Nanny.
Grebo was two worried eyes, one yellow, one pearly white, in the shadows. The witches were impressed. Grebo had once brought down an elk. There was practically nothing that he wouldn't attack, including architecture.
"I'd have thought they'd have no trouble with vampires then," said Agnes.
"Ech, kenne, flicky, flicky, you think we're flares the forest fairies,"
sneered a blue man.
"They can't fly," said Nanny.
"It's quite a nice island." "Even so," Magrat mumbled.
"Girl, your husband was messing around with politics, which is why we're in this trouble. And to get, you've got to give. Now he's ill, and you're queen, so you can do as you like, right? There's no one who can tell you what to do, isn't that so?"
"Yes, I suppose so."
"So damn well give 'em the island, and they've got something here to fight for. Otherwise they'll just push on through anyway, and nick all our livestock on the way. Dress that up in fancy talk, and you've got politics."
"Nanny," said Agnes.
"Yep."
"Don't get angry. But you don't think Granny's doing this on purpose, do you? Keeping back, I mean, so that we have to form a three and work together."
"Why'd she do that?"
"So we develop insights and pull together and learn valuable lessons," said Magrat.
Nanny paused with her pipe halfway to her lips.
"No," she said. "I don't reckon Granny'd be thinking like that, because that's soppy garbage. Here, you blokes, here's the key to the drinks cupboard in the scullery. Bugger off and have fun. Don't touch the stuff in the green bottles, because it's... Yeah, I expect you'll be all right."
There was a blue blur, and the room was cleared.
"We've got things Granny ain't got," said Nanny.
"Yes," said Agnes.
"Magrat's got a baby. I've got no scruples. And we've both got you."
"What good will I be?"
"Well, for one thing, you're in two minds about everything."
There was a tinkle of glass from the scullery and a scream of,
"Ah, yes, Givens, yes, look at it, a fistful of heat."
"Greaves."
"Chee-chee, here, wait. Summer old make good, good, yeah, now. Someone hold his arms. Stitch this, fram a brinnet goggle."
Some more glass broke. "We'll all go back into the castle," said Nanny, "on our terms. Face this count down. And we'll take garlic and lemons and all the other stuff, and some of Mr. Oates's holy water. You can't tell me all that stuff together won't work."
"And they'll let us in, will they?" said Agnes.
"They'll have a lot to think about," said Nanny. "What with a mob at the gates,
we can nip in round the back."
"What mob?" said Magrat.
"We'll organise one," said Nanny.
"You don't organise a mob, Nanny," said Agnes. "A mob is something that happens spontaneously."
Nanny Ogg's eyes gleamed. "There's 79 Ogs in these parts," she said. "Spontaneous it is, then."
Her gaze fell for a moment on the forest of familial pictures, and then she removed a boot and hammered on the wall beside her. After a few seconds, they heard a door bang and footsteps pass in front of the window. Jason Ogg, blacksmith and head male of the Ogg clan, poked his head around the front door.
Yes, Mum?
There's going to be a spontaneous mob storming the castle in, half an hour, said Nanny. Put the word out.
Yes, Mum.
Tell everyone I said it ain't compulsory for them to be there, of course, Nanny added.
Jason glanced at the hierarchy of Oggs. Nanny didn't have to add anything more to that sentence. Everyone knew that the cat's box sometimes needed lining.
Yes, Mum. I'll tell them you said they didn't have to come if they don't want to.
Good boy.
Is it, flaming torches or, you know, scythes and stuff?
That's always tricky, said Nanny, but I'd say both.
Battering ram, Mum?
No, I don't think so.
Good. It is my door, after all, said Magrat.
Anything special for people to yell, Mum?
Oh, general yelling, I think.
Anything to throw?
Just rocks on this occasion, said Nanny.
Not large ones, said Magrat. Some of the stonework around the main gate is quite fragile.
Okay, nothing harder than sandstone, understand? And tell our Kev to roll out a barrel of my number 3 beer, said Nanny. Better pour a bottle of brandy in it to keep out the chill. It can really strike right through your coat when you're hanging around outside a castle chanting and waving. And get our Nev to run up to poor chicks and say Mrs. Ogg presents her compliments and we want half a dozen big cheeses and 10 dozen eggs. And tell Mrs. Carter will she be so good as to let us have a big jar of those pickled onions she does so well. It's a shame that we've got no time to roast something, but I suppose you have to put up with that sort of inconvenience when you're being spontaneous.
Nanny Ogg winked at Agnes.
Yes, Mum.
Nanny, said Magrat when Jason had hurried away.
Yes, dear.
A couple of months ago, when Verence suggested that tax on liquor exports, there was a big crowd protesting in the courtyard, and he said, Oh, well, if that's the will of the people.
Well, it was the will of the people, said Nanny.
Oh, right, good.
Only sometimes they temporarily forget what their will is, said Nanny. Now you can leave young Esme next door with Jason's wife.
I'm keeping her with me, said Magrat. She's happy enough on my back.
You can't do that, said Agnes.
Don't you dare argue with me, Agnes Knit, said Magrat, drawing herself up, and not a word out of you, Nanny.
Wouldn't dream of it, said Nanny. The Knack-Mack Feagle always take their babies into battle too.
Mind you, for use as a weapon if it comes to it.
Magrat relaxed a little. She said her first word this morning, she said, looking proud.
What, at 14 days? Said Nanny, doubtfully.
Yes, it was blup.
Blup?
Yes, it was. More of a bubble than a word, I suppose.
Let's get the stuff together, said Nanny, standing up. We're a coven, ladies, we're a trio. I miss Granny as much as you do, but we've got to deal with things as she would.
She took a few deep breaths.
I can't be having with this.
It sounds better the way she says it, said Agnes.
I know.
Hodgesarg ate his meal in the servants' dining room off the kitchen and ate alone. There were new people around, but Hodgesarg generally didn't pay much attention to non-falconers. There were always other people in the castle, and they had jobs to do, and if pressed, Hodgesarg would vaguely acknowledge the fact that if he left his laundry in a sack by the kitchen door every week, it would be washed and dried 2 days later. There were his meals, the game he left on the cold slab in the long pantry got dealt with, and so on. He was returning to the mews when one of the shadows pulled him into the darkness with a hand clamped over his mouth.
It's me, Mrs. Ogg, said Nanny. You all right, Hodgesarg?
And by this, Hodgesarg contrived to indicate that he was fine, except for someone's thumb blocking his breathing.
Where are the vampires?
Nanny released her grip.
Vampires? The falconer panted. They the ones that walk around slowly?
No, that's the food, said Nanny. Any swish-looking buggers about as well, any soldiers.
There was a soft thud from somewhere in the shadows, and someone said,
Blast, I've dropped the nappy bag. Did you see where it rolled? There's some new ladies and gentlemen, said Hodgesarg. They're hanging around the kitchens. There's some men in chain mail, too.
Damn, said Nanny.
There's the little door off the main hall, said Magrat, but that's always locked on the inside.
Agnes swallowed.
All right, I'll go and unlock it, then. Nanny tapped her on the shoulder. You be all right? Well, they can't control me. They can grab you, though. Vlad won't want you hurt, said Perdita. You saw the way he looked at us.
I think I'll be all right, said Agnes.
You know your own mind's best, I'm sure, said Nanny. Got the holy water?
Let's hope it works better than the garlic, said Agnes.
Good luck. Nanny cocked her head. Sounds like the mob is spontaneously arriving at the gate. Go.
Agnes ran off into the rain, around the castle to the doors of the kitchen. They were wide open. She made it to the corridor beyond the kitchens when a hand grabbed her shoulder, and then in a blur of speed, two young men were standing in front of her. They were dressed something like the young opera-goers she'd seen in Ankh-Morpork, except that their fancy waistcoats would have been considered far too fast by the staider members of the community, and they wore their hair long, like a poet who hopes that romantically flowing locks will make up for a wretched inability to find a rhyme for daffodil.
"Why are you in such a hurry, girl?" one said.
Agnes sagged.
"Look," she said, "I'm very busy. Can we speed this up? Can we dispense with all the leers and the I like a girl with spirit stuff? Can we get right to the bit where I twist out of your grip and kick you in the—"
One of them struck her hard across the face.
"No," he said. "I'll tell Vlad of you,"
Perdita screamed in Agnes's voice. The other vampire hesitated.
"Ah, yes, he knows me," said Agnes and Perdita together. "Ha!"
One of the vampires looked her up and down.
"What, you?" he said.
"Yes, her," said a voice.
Vlad strolled towards them, thumbs hooked into the pockets of his waistcoat.
"Demone, Crimson, to me, please."
The two went and stood meekly in front of him. There was a blur, and then his thumbs were back in his waistcoat, and the two vampires were in mid-crumple and sinking to the floor.
"This is the kind of thing we don't do to our guests," said Vlad, stepping over Demone's twitching body and holding out his hands to Agnes. "Did they hurt you? Say the word and I'll turn them over to Lacrimosa. She's just discovered you have a torture chamber here, and to think we thought Lunkra was backward."
"Oh, that old thing," said Agnes weakly.
Crimson was making bubbling noises.
"I didn't even see his hands move," said Perdita. It's been there for centuries."
"Oh, really? She did say there weren't enough straps and buckles. Still, she is inventive. Just say the word."
"Say the word," Perdita prompted. "There'd be two less of them."
No,
said Agnes.
"Ah, moral cowardice from the fat girl.
Who are they?"
We brought some of the clan in on the carts. They can make themselves useful, Father said.
Oh, they're relatives. Granny Weatherwax would have said yes,
Perdita whispered. Vlad coughed gently.
By blood, he said, yes, in a way, but subservient. Do come this way.
He gently took her arm and led her back up the passage, treading heavily on Crimson's twitching hand as he did so.
You mean vampirism is like pyramid selling, said Agnes.
She was alone with Vlad. Admittedly, this had the edge over being alone with the other two, but somehow at a time like this it seemed vital to hear the sound of her own voice, if only to remind herself that she was alive.
I'm sorry, said Vlad. Who sells pyramids?
No, I mean, you bite five necks, and in 2 months' time you get a lake of blood of your very own.
He smiled, but a little cautiously.
I can see I will have a lot to learn, he said. I understood every word in that sentence, but not the sentence itself. I'm sure there is a lot you can teach me. And indeed, I could teach you.
No, said Agnes flatly.
But when we... Oh, what is that moron doing now?
A cloud of dust was advancing from the direction of the kitchens. In the middle of it, holding a bucket and a shovel, was Igor.
Igor? Yes, master. You're putting down dust again, aren't you? Yes, master. And why are you putting down dust, Igor?
Said Vlad icily.
You've got to have dust, master. It's tradition. Igor, mother told you, we don't want dust. We don't want huge candlesticks. We don't want eye holes cut in all the pictures. And we certainly don't want your wretched box of damn spiders and your stupid little whip.
In the ringing, red-hot silence, Igor looked down at his feet.
"Spiders' webs is what people expect, Master," he mumbled. "We don't want them."
"The old Count liked my spiders," said Igor, his voice like some little insect that would nevertheless not be squashed.
"It's ridiculous, Igor. He used to say, 'Good webs today, Igor. Look, just go away, will you? See if you can't sort out that dreadful smell from the garderobe. Mother says it makes her eyes water. And stand up straight, and walk properly,' Vlad called after him. 'No one's impressed by the limp.'
Agnes saw Igor's retreating back pause for a moment, and then she expected him to say something, but then he continued his wobbly walk.
"He's such a big baby," said Vlad, shaking his head. "I'm sorry you had to see that."
"Yes, I think I'm sorry too," said Agnes.
"He's going to be replaced. Father's only been keeping him on out of sentiment. I'm afraid he came with the old castle, along with the creaking roof and the strange smell halfway up the main stairs, which I have to say is not as bad as the one we've noticed here. Oh, dear, look at this, will you? We turn our back for 5 minutes."
There was a huge and very dribbly candle burning in a tall black candlestick. King Verence had all those oil lamps put in, a lovely modern light, and Igor's been going round replacing them with candles again. We don't even know where he gets them from. Lackey thinks he saves his earwax. They were in the long room beside the great hall now. Vlad lifted the candlestick up so that the flame's glow lit the wall.
"Oh, they've put the pictures up. You ought to get to know the family."
The light fell on a portrait of a tall, thin, grey-haired man in evening dress and a red-lined cloak. He looked quite distinguished in a distant, aloof sort of way. There was the glimmer of a lengthened canine on his lower lip.
"My great-uncle," said Vlad, "the last incumbent."
"What's the sash and star he's wearing?" said Agnes. She could hear the sounds of the mob, far off but growing louder.
"The Order of Gavotte. He built our family home. Don't go near the castle, we call it. I don't know whether you've heard of it."
"It's a strange name."
"Oh, he used to laugh about it. The local coachman used to warn visitors, you see. 'Don't go near the castle,' they'd say. 'Even if it means spending a night up a tree, never go up there to the castle,' they'd tell people. 'Whatever you do, don't set foot in the castle.' He said it was marvellous publicity. Sometimes he had every bedroom full by 9 p.m, and people would be hammering on the door to get in. Travellers would go miles out of their way to see what all the fuss was about. We won't see his like again, with any luck. He did rather play to the crowd, I'm afraid. Rose from the grave so often that he had a coffin with a revolving lid. Ah! Aunt Carmilla!"
Agnes stared at a very severe woman in a figure-hugging black dress and deep plum lipstick.
"She was said to bathe in the blood of up to 200 virgins at a time," Vlad said. "I don't believe that. Use more than 80 virgins, and even quite a large bath will overflow, Lacrimosa tells me."
"These little details are important," said Agnes, buoyed up by the excitement of terror. "And of course it's so hard to find the soap."
"Killed by a mob, I'm afraid."
"People can be so ungrateful."
"And this," the light passed along the hall, "is my grandfather."
A bald head, dark-rimmed, staring eyes, two teeth like needles, two ears like bat wings, fingernails that hadn't been trimmed for years.
"But half the picture's just bare canvas," said Agnes.
"The family story is that old Magirato got hungry," said Vlad. "A very direct approach to things, my grandfather. See the reddish-brown stains just there? Very much in the old style. And here, well, some distant ancestor, that's all I know."
The picture was mostly dark varnish. There was a suggestion of a beak on a hunched figure. Vlad turned away quickly.
"We've come a long way, of course," he said. "Evolution, Father says."
"They look very powerful," said Agnes.
"Oh, yes. So very powerful, and yet so very, very dumb," said Vlad. "My father thinks stupidity is somehow built into vampirism, as if the desire for fresh blood is linked to being as thick as a plank. Father is a very unusual vampire. He and Mother raised us differently.
differently, said Agnes.
Vampires aren't very family-orientated. Father says that's natural. Humans are raising their successors, you see, but we live for a very long time, so a vampire is raising competitors. There's not a lot of family feeling, you could say.
Really?
In the depths of her pocket, Agnes's fingers closed around the bottle of holy water.
But Father said self-help was the only way out. Break the cycle of stupidity, he said. Little traces of garlic were put into our food to get us used to it. He tried early exposure to various religious symbols. Oh, dear, we must have had the oddest nursery wallpaper in the world. Never mind the jolly frieze of Gertie the Dancing Garlic. And I have to say that their efficacy isn't that good in any case. He even made us go out and play during the day. That which does not kill us, he'd say, makes us strong.
Agnes's arm whirled. The holy water spiraled out of the bottle and hit Vlad full in the chest. He threw his arms wide and screamed as water cascaded down and poured into his shoes. She'd never expected it to be this easy. He raised his head and winked at her.
Look at this waistcoat. Will you look at this waistcoat? Do you know what water does to silk? You just never get it out. No matter what you do, there's always a mark.
He looked at her frozen expression and sighed.
I suppose we'd better get some things off our chest, hadn't we? He said.
He looked up at the wall and took down a very large and spiky axe. He thrust it at her.
Take this and cut my head off, will you? He said. Look, I'll loosen my cravat. Don't want blood on it, do we? There, see?
Are you trying to tell me that you were brought up with this, too? She said hotly. What was it, a little light hatchet practice after breakfast? Cut your head off a little bit every day and the real thing won't hurt.
Vlad rolled his eyes.
Everyone knows that cutting off a vampire's head is internationally acceptable, he said. I'm sure Nanny Ogg would be swinging right now. Come along, there's a lot of muscle in those rather thick arms. She
swung. He reached around from behind her and whisked the axe out of her arms.
Sure, he finished. We are also very, very fast.
He tested the blade with his thumb.
Blunt, I notice. My dear Miss Knit, it may just be more trouble than it's worth to try to get rid of us, do you see? Now old Maggie Rato there would not have made the kind of offer we are making to Loncra, dear me, no. Are we ravaging across the country? No. Forcing our way into bedrooms? Certainly not. What's a little blood for the good of the community? Of course, Verence will have to be demoted a little, but let's face it, the man is rather more of a clerk than a king. And our friends may find us grateful. What is the point of resisting?
Are vampires ever grateful?
We can learn.
You're just saying that in exchange for not actually being evil, you'll simply be bad, is that it?
What we are saying, my dear, is that our time has come,
said a voice behind them. They both turned. The Count had stepped into the gallery. He was wearing a smoking jacket. There was an armed man strolling on either side of him.
Oh, dear Vlad, playing with your food. Good evening, Miss Knit. We appear to have a mob at the gates, Vlad.
Really? That's exciting. I've never seen a real mob.
I wish your first could have been a better one, said the Count and sniffed. There's no passion in it. Still, it'd be too tiresome to let it go on all through dinner. I shall tell them to go away.
The doors of the hall swung open without apparent aid.
Shall we go and watch? Said Vlad.
I think I'll go and powder my... I'll just be a minute, said Agnes, backing away.
She darted down the little corridor that led to the small door and drew the bolts.
"About time," said Nanny, hurrying in. "It's really clammy out here.
They've gone to look at the mob. But there's other vampires here, not just the guards. The rest must have come in on the carts. They're like not quite servants, but they take orders."
"How many are there?"
said Magrat. "I haven't found out. Vlad is trying to get to know me better."
"Good plan," said Nanny. "See if he talks in his sleep.
Nanny!"
"Let's see his lordship in action, shall we?" said Nanny. "We can nip into the old guard room alongside the door and look through the squint."
"I want to get Verence," said Magrat.
"He's not going anywhere," said Nanny, striding into the little room by the door, "and I don't reckon they're planning to kill him. Anyway,
He's got some protection now.
I think these really are new vampires, said Agnes. They really aren't like the old sort.
Then we face them, here and now, said Nanny. That's what Esme would do, sure enough.
But are we strong enough, said Agnes.
Granny wouldn't have asked, said Perdita.
There's three of us, isn't there? Said Nanny.
She produced a flask and uncorked it.
And a bit of help. Anyone else want some?
That's brandy, Nanny, said Margaret. Do you want to face the vampires drunk?
Sounds a whole lot better than facing them sober, said Nanny, taking a gulp and shuddering. Oh, only sensible bit of advice Agnes got from Mr. Oates, I reckon. Vampire hunters needs to be a little bit tipsy, he said. Well, I always listen to good advice.